720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know what? Today, we're going to do something a little bit different and lots of fun and very, very cool. We are here with Scott Catoon, who is the CEO and host of Technori. You know Technori. They've been doing a WGN Plus podcast since earlier this year. And so he's here with me in studio today, and he's going to be hanging out all day long, and we're going to be talking about startup things happening right here in Chicago and the people involved in all of those startups. So glad to be with you today,
Scott. Thank you, Amy. I'm pretty thrilled to be here, as well as just joy to be kind of co-chairing with you today. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, for sure. And it's always lovely here on in the Michigan Avenue Showcase Studio. Lots of people less bundled today than usual is what...
It's supposed to be snow coming in pretty soon, and a bunch of it. Last time I was here, I was with Steve Bertrand, and there was people actually tapping on the windows. That was a little awkward.
Well, you know, I used to do some overnights here, and they do more than tap on the window.
I was just going to say, that's a little scarier situation.
I maybe have had a few mooners and flashers. You're never prepared for it.
I don't want to say that I want that to happen today, but it would be kind of cool to have something memorable, you know, other than just being here with you.
Sure, sure. No, you know, and it never fails that when you're having like a very tender moment with someone on the air, or they're saying something really painful or really revealing, showing great vulnerability, you finally get them to that point in the interview, and suddenly there's someone behind them like twerking. Like, can you not? But anyway.
I'll stay focused.
Yeah, if you could not twerk today. No, I'm just kidding. If we have twerkers... Just keep going. So we're here today, and we're going to be talking with a lot of people doing really interesting things here in Chicago. And, you know, what I think is really interesting about the startup world is it's so, you know, there's great power in being able to be part of a small operation and move quickly. And you have that wonderful agility that sometimes those large legacy businesses don't have. You know, there's a lot of kind of this is the way we've always done things that you just don't see so much in the startup culture that I think is really refreshing. And that's got to be very energizing to work around.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that was the whole premise here. I mean, this you mentioned that we've been with WGN since about May. The Technori Showcase as a whole was founded by Seth Kravitz in 2010. And since that time, you know, more than 300 companies have come through, whether that's on stage or in studio. And the whole premise behind it was to create momentum and to give these companies that are nimble, like you said, they need a little bit of structure. They need a little bit of direction sometimes. And a lot of them have gone on. Spot Here was the first one that's ever been on. So that's, you know, an example of some of the size of companies have gone on to raise over $260 million now. And one of the things that is cool, you mentioned these older sort of legacy companies, is they've started to take notice. Mm-hmm. And they've started to create venture arms and all kinds of really cool stuff and are trying to emulate what our startup companies in Chicago do. So a lot of the mainstay companies that have been out in the suburbs are now coming here in downtown Chicago, 1871 or wherever, and taking space. It's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And so how many startups has Technori worked with since the jump, since the very beginning?
It's over 300, and it's in more than five states. So we've had, as of the last November event, which was for all veterans, we've had 285 companies on stage in Chicago's Chase Auditorium for obviously Chase's auditorium in Chicago.
Sure.
We've had a handful of them on in Milwaukee. We've done two or three startup Milwaukee. We had a big one in Atlanta. We've had two in Dubuque, one in Miami, one in LA. We're going to be in New York towards the end of the spring and back in Los Angeles towards the end of next year. So we've been all over the place.
Is that the goal, to get a Technori presence in every city or every major market?
Yeah. So the original mission that Seth had built was sort of a TEDx model, if you will, to be in all these cities. But what I have really kind of turned things around is, yeah, we'll be in other cities, but it's more of a tour. We're not trying to set mm-hmm. up shop there. The real focus and goal is to bring these companies and the attention and audience to Chicago, to bring companies that are not here, the Florida companies, whatever. So in January, our showcase will actually be flying in a handful of companies from Ohio, from Florida, from Los Angeles to be here in Chicago, because we want to showcase what Chicago has built at now the third largest tech startup community in the entire country, probably the world.
See, I'm very much in favor of that, because another topic we've talked about a lot on the program is film production companies, and how it used to be that you would kind of cut your teeth here and then bail out to one of the coasts. But now there's so many people doing things to keep talented people in right here in Chicago, both in the film world, in the comedy world, in the business world, in the tech startups, all those things. And that's very exciting to me, because that bodes well for a really strong future for Chicago.
It certainly is. I mean, one of the things that I would add to that is just the simple fact that we have two of the top five universities in the country, and University of Chicago and Northwestern down the street from one another. Their focuses in tech, fintech, and financial services and healthcare. There's no excuse for us to lose that talent to New York and San Francisco. So the more inclusive that we can build this community, the more accessible we make Chicago, the harder it becomes for those guys to be able to explain why they would leave Chicago.
Right, right. Because at some point it just becomes a, why would you leave here other than you think you need to go to a coast when you have everything that you could possibly want?
Yeah, you talked about artists and stuff. So I was at Second City. I think you were also there at one point. Lamorne Morris, who's on New Girl, he's a friend of mine from high school, and mm-hmm. he went there and he was at College of DuPage and at Second City. And we kept asking, like, you know, his big mission was to get to Los Angeles. And obviously it worked out for him. But a lot of the people that I've talked to since, we had Jack Newell, who is the mm-hmm. Wabash Lights, on last week on our show. He's here. He's doing all of his work, you know, here. And a lot of the filmmakers are here because look at the landscape.
Yeah.
I mean, other than today, it's gorgeous.
Right. Other than that weather thing, we're good.
Other than that whole snow.
Right. All right. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hanging out with Scott Catoon today. We are talking with lots and lots of people connected to Technori, lots of startups, cool things we're talking about today. Very, very exciting stuff in the program. Stick around. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And today, we have a very special friend with us in studio. That is Scott Catoon, who is the CEO and host of Technori. He's hanging out with us the whole show, and he's co-hosting with us today so that we can talk all about all the cool things that Technori is doing and some of the really cool startups happening right here in Chicago. By no means is this all of them. We couldn't possibly fill that. Even if we were on for 24 hours, we couldn't fill it up with all the startups happening in Chicago. But nonetheless, we have a few of them joining us today to talk about what they do. And right now we're joined by Aristotle Loomis, who is the founder of Ellison Eyewear, the first equity crowdfunder for Technori. Welcome to the program, Aristotle.
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
Sure can. Can you hear us fine?
Yes, I can.
Great. So certainly, tell us about Ellison Eyewear and your startup process, and especially as you were doing crowdfunding.
Yeah, so I guess a little backdrop is, you know, Ellison Eyewear is a handmade Greek eyewear company. We produce and manufacture all our products in Greece, design them. All the materials are sourced from Italy, and our lenses are Carl Zeiss. We have very different variants of lenses, from polarization to optical and things of that nature. As it relates to the crowdfunding, we are one of the first companies in the country to actually execute this type of resource for raising capital, and one of, I believe, first in Chicago to do it in our space, in the eyewear space. So we've worked and teamed up with Scott and a couple other players such as Technori in order to accomplish that.
One of the first?
One of the first.
What year are we talking then?
Well, for this year, because it just got changed. The SEC changed its rules and regulations around equity crowdfunding. So we are one of the first in the country to actually execute on this particular fundraising opportunity.
So one of the things that Aristotle's talking about is equity crowdfunding versus regular crowdfunding. People are very, very familiar with Kickstarter and Indiegogo,
sure.
Which... not, you know, many cool products. Oculus is one. I'm sure Aristotle will talk. That's his case study. But the main difference is instead of T-shirts and stickers, when you do equity crowdfunding, you get the T-shirts and stickers, plus you get actual stock in the company. And Technori partnered with Republic, which is a New York-based platform. The law actually changed over in May, so it hasn't been that long, and there's only a handful of players in the game right now with equity. And we partnered with Republic so that we could bring this platform to Chicago, not just because we wanted to be able to crowdfund, but because if you look at first-time funders, you look at people with product companies that tech investors usually sort of don't quite look at as like what they're looking for, or you look at minority and female founders who usually have a very hard time raising funds, this is an unbelievable platform where you can rely on and tap into a network of people who can essentially be the modern version of a friends and family round, and that's what we've got Aristotle doing with our first campaign. And I just noticed he's actually live streaming this on Facebook, which is awesome.
Excellent. And so the idea of equity crowdfunding, it's really, it doesn't, maybe in practice for the founder, is not that much different than a Kickstarter, Indiegogo, but what you're delivering back is what really the key differentiator is.
I think it is. I think Aristotle could probably talk more to from a founder standpoint of what it's like. What I would add is there are SEC rulings and things you have to do. So on a normal Kickstarter, I could just go in and fill out what I want and tell people a story and put a video up there and raise the money. And there's very little oversight. This is actual equity. So there's what they call a crowd safe, which is Y Combinator uses this. And it's a mm-hmm. sort of a version of a convertible note as an investment tool. And this enables you to basically offer all kinds of flexibility and have a whole group, 1,000 people, represent one piece of equity, one set of shares. So you have to file with the SEC, and there's a lot of paperwork and stuff. Aristotle, I don't know if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what that process was like for you.
Yeah, so I apologize. I thought there was a little bit more context behind the equity crowdfunding, but it is a new space, and this is what we're doing. We're going out and advocating and kind of sharing the experience of it, and hopefully by the end of this campaign be a success story and advocate for it as well. But the way it works, as you said before, it really is that the form and structure of it is similar to a Kickstarter or Indiegogo, but the return is where it completely changes the game. So, you know, for us, for our campaign example, we have ranges of investment from $30 all the way to $5,500. Now, we do give a perk. So for the $30, you would get a lifetime membership to Ellison. But $5,500, you get not only equity, but you get a trip to Greece with me and to go look at the manufacturing plant and essentially be a founder for a day. So one of the biggest things that has changed and why it's to the benefit of the consumer now is that they actually get to be a part of the brands that they help build. And one of the examples that I use, especially in the case study, is Oculus, for example. It's a well-known brand. Everybody knows what it is. It operates for the VR virtual reality headset. They got their start on Kickstarter. They raised $3 million. The average buy-in or perk package was about $500. 2 years later, after they made their money on $3 million on Kickstarter, they sold to Facebook for $2 billion. Now, what's different is those Kickstarter backers, all they got out of that deal was that $500 headset in advance. However, let's just say if they were to do equity crowdfunding and they were to actually not only get that headset but make that $500 investment, each one of those people who participated in that crowdfunding campaign would have received a $500,000 check. Same thing goes for Misfit, which was a athletic watch company. Scott did start on Indiegogo, raised, I think, about $500,000, and then sold 2 years later to Fossil Watches for $260 million. Had those people have had an equity stake in the company, then they would have received a $30,000 to $40,000 check for the buyout. So the main thing is, the point here is that these companies were started on this crowdfunding campaign by their loyal backers. And where equity and the SEC change is now developing a platform where the people who helped the company get where it is today is going to also benefit from the acquisition or any type of liquidation or whatever it may be. So that's what we're doing. And given the fact that Ellison was built around the community, and if it wasn't for our community, we wouldn't be here today. So we're almost doing a unique fundraising opportunity to allow them to get to the next level of growth with us as well.
And what I think is cool, and Aristotle mentioned, obviously, is the angle. Like, you're an early stage startup. You don't have any of the tools and things like that. So what is really cool is if you're a startup company that has been around for a little while and you don't need that money just to raise the tool, the big differentiator here with this compared to every other platform is investing in startup companies used to be something you had to be what was called an accredited investor. Mm-hmm. Now with this, anybody, people walking by the studio right now could come into this campaign and put $30 into this company if they wanted to and own a piece of it, or up to $100,000. And that's the big piece, point.
That's what I was about to ask, is it seems like this is kind of a middle ground between a personal loan or a crowdfunding thing and being an accredited investor. This is a middle step.
I would say it's a middle step, although with the SEC stuff and the way that this is actually set up, you actually do get a note that is like you own equity,
right?
And when the exit happens, you will get you actually get your payout, which is, you know, to me, awesome.
So to speak a little bit more to the instrument that we're using, it's very unique because it is it is something that was developed out of Y Combinator, out of Silicon Valley. So it's really, you know, the pain points with any startup is fundraising, right? You could spend a lot of that time fundraising through institutional or angel, but we all know that it's exhausting and it takes really where the important energy of the founders to the growth of the company. So the way that they developed it in conjunction with the SEC and the government is to develop a CrowdSafe. And what the SAFE agreement stands for is the Simple Agreement for Future Equity. So what it traditionally does is you essentially buy into the company, the equity amount, and then upon a certain trigger point, whether it's a fundraising round, a significant fundraising round, or whether it's a acquisition, that's when your investment within convertible equity, and then you have the opportunity to benefit from that acquisition. Yeah. So it's kind of like a thing, and then once a certain trigger point happens, that's when you get that equity.
Excellent. I love that. And where can people go to find out more about Ellison Eyewear?
You could go to, actually our campaign is republic.co/Ellison, E-L-L-I-S-O-N. And then our website is wearellison.com, which is W-E-A-R-E-L-L-I-S-O-N.
Great. Thanks so much, Aristotle Loomis. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
All right, my friends, we are going to take a little break, get you to news and all that good stuff. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us on this, I was going to say lovely Saturday, but I don't think today qualifies. It's a little dreary out there, but everybody's bundling up, and so I hope you're warm and dry wherever you are, and I appreciate you sharing part of your Saturday with me. Actually, with us, because I have a co-host today, Scott Catoon, who is CEO and host of Technori. If you are not familiar, which I'm sure you are, but just in case you are not, on WGN Plus, Technori has a podcast. It's been running since earlier this year. Do check it out, but he is the host of that for sure, so he's here with us today, hanging out, and we now have another person with us, and that is Dudley Byler, who is the founder of Lavier Capital Management. Welcome to the program. Glad that you're here.
Great to be here.
Dudley, welcome.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to see you, see you behind a mic. You look great.
Thank you.
So Dudley is the first ever. We announced in November that we were going to be doing crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, and we launched our partnership with Republic in New York, and we got our new page, our landing page, and the first investor to join our page was Dudley. So thank you for that.
My pleasure. It's a pretty awesome opportunity you have.
Well, thank you. One of the things I wanted to kind of start things off with was you obviously listened to a previous conversation with Aristotle Loomis, who is our first crowdfunding company. And as an investor, as an early stage and angel investor, what is your take on crowdfunding? Many of the investors feel like it's a little bit of a threat. Where do you lie on that?
I certainly wouldn't call it a threat. I'd look at it as an opportunity. I think with equity crowdfunding, you're seeing it technology applied to the capital raising process that, you know, it hasn't been applied to. And so what does that mean is you're taking out a lot of inefficiencies and opaqueness within a marketplace, and you're bringing it forward for a lot of folks to participate. You know, technology is decentralizing, it's democratizing, and that's what you're doing to the capital raising process. So from Aristotle and Ellison raising equity crowdfunding, I think that among others that will follow him is a interesting opportunity to follow.
And does it seem like people are using crowdfunding mostly for that initial seed money that will get them to the point where they can even have a conversation with a VC?
Yeah, so I think with crowdfunding, it's going to begin where the capital raising process is most inefficient, and that would be at the beginning. So as these companies mature and continue to gain traction, not only on a business level, but become more aware in the marketplace, you will see additional capital providers, more high net worth that leads to institutional type investors as the company matures.
You're so diplomatic about that, but what he means is once you figure out what the hell you're doing, then you get it together and then you go to the VC, I think is where you're going with that, right?
You should have heard the words that Dudley used when I interviewed him at his drones game. This is like the linguist right here.
Fair enough.
One thing I would like to add to this is I think why this is so important to the Chicago investing community and the startup community that we have is the fact that, I mean, there's no secret here. Lots of the startup companies don't make it. It's 8, 9 mm-hmm. out of the 10 are not going to make it. And to sort of remove the liability from our investors in Chicago from the early part of this, where they're building a product and they're sort of finding out who they are as a company, by letting them crowdfund and take, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 in to build the initial product before they come to guys like you and use your money, it will kind of seed out some of the ones that maybe shouldn't be there in the first place. And if they can't raise money on the idea on the crowdfunding platform, maybe they're just not meant to be a company.
Yeah, I would, as the investor, what you just said, I would just call that de-risking.
So again, with that diplomacy.
By the time it comes on my plate, it should have some level of de-risking. Granted, as an early stage investor, your cost of capital is going to be fairly rich, but that's the intent is to move it down the pipeline, bring in the network and introductions, and continue to push the business forward. But beginning with proof of concept crowdfunding, most of these crowdfunding are going to be B2C type customer or type companies where there's a customer product as opposed to B2B, which is more of a challenging raise.
So, Dudley, when you are meeting with people to decide whether or not to invest in what they're building, what are you most looking for? What to you is just kind of the earmarks of this is a slam dunk or this is definitely someone I want to work with versus somebody you're like kind of on the fence about? Because I'm sure there's people listening that really want to have a conversation with a venture capitalist at some point. And I think it's very intimidating to a lot of startups. And so what are those things you're most looking for?
Yeah, so there is no slam dunk. I'll begin there. You know, you're trying to put the probabilities in your favor. Things that I look at, first of all, is the person. You are beginning a relationship, a partnership, that will last, in theory, a long time. So, you know, do you get along with them? Because there will be challenges along the way. Now, from a business standpoint, is there proof of concept? Has somebody at this early stage in the game, have you been able to test your product? Has somebody parted with their money to purchase your product and or service? That there is that confirmation from the market? And have you set up some way to distribute your product? How are you finding your customers? How much does it cost to acquire those customers? And what is the lifetime value? And it doesn't need to be that. That's a lot there, but there are small tests of just knowing that you're thinking about it and it's that thoughtful about your process. That's a huge indicator. Even if the tests aren't as rosy as what you had anticipated, there's the thoughtfulness behind
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. And where do you see the misstep most often? Is it usually in the proven test of the product or the distribution, or are those usually buttoned up and it's maybe the you're not sold on the personal part?
I'd say all.
Okay.
There's
no one common error.
You see it all. The person usually I can just throw that away to begin with. That's a pretty quick one. But, you know, sometimes there's a good product, but they don't necessarily have the distribution down. Or maybe somewhere, you know, a company I was just talking to that has done things that a mature company would do, but hasn't been able to put the fundraising piece together. So there's just strengths and weaknesses that usually are very well tied to whoever the founder or the founding team is, depending on what their strengths and network looks like.
I can tell you from spending some time with Dudley, you better have your driver models and your numbers in order and be able to answer questions. Because the one thing that Dudley does, and I think it's a good thing, a lot of investors invest just in like, boy, that feels great. That looks like mm-hmm. a cool idea. But they don't actually focus on, does this founder or does this leader have their numbers and know what they're trying to do and how can they measure it? That's the part that I think we're still a little behind here in Chicago. That's the one area I think that we need to improve on is the founders need to be a little bit more mathematical about their approach.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to speak to that because I think I would agree, but I think it's an education. I think the Chicago ecosystem today as compared to, say, 36 or 48 months ago is an entirely different place.
For
and
sure.
The ecosystem needs to be more robust. There needs to be those mentors that hold the hand, for lack of a better way to describe it, with these first-time entrepreneurs or early entrepreneurs to guide them through these processes and understand what it is. There needs to be the investor base to raise that capital to move them down to more institutional. And there needs to be a ecosystem that's supportive of entrepreneurism and the failure that is most.
So if they follow you on Twitter at Yield Depression, you'll be their mentor is what you're saying?
Well, you can always DM me.
Best Twitter handle ever.
Yeah, that is a good one. And so what you mentioned 36, 48 months ago, how different the landscape was, and indeed it shifts so quickly. What do you foresee kind of the next big piece of that? In 36 months from now, we're having this conversation. What is your prediction of what the landscape here in Chicago might look more like?
Well, I'm always fearful of crystal ball forecasts, not my thing, but I would continue to see it to evolve and strengthen. I would see that Chicago gets kind of passed by the coasts as you look at some of the opportunities here and the quality of companies and their relative valuations compared to the coasts. There's some good value here, and and that will be found out with time.
Excellent. We've been talking with Dudley Byler, who's the founder of Lavier Capital Management. We have to take a break, but we will continue this conversation all about things startup and business here in Chicago, here with my co-host today, Scott Catoon, CEO and host of Technori. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've been doing things a little bit different today. We're mixing it up on you, and we have been having so much fun. Scott Catoon is here. He's CEO and host at Technori. And you know Technori. There's a WGN Plus podcast. It's been running since earlier this year. If you haven't listened to it, please give it a listen. It's a really great and very, very informative podcast. But he has been here co-hosting with us today, hanging out. We've been talking about all things startup and investor and business and all those good things right here in Chicago. But we also have someone else here, and that is Bennett Wakenight, producer for Technori. Hi, Bennett. How's it going?
Hello, everybody.
So what's happening on social media? Because I know in the Technori podcast, that's a thing you do, and you check in to see what all is trending.
Yeah, we check in, just have a vibe on what's going on in the community, whether it's large scale nationally or, you know, what's going on over at 1871, the newest development. And easily the biggest story of the past today and the past 3 days has been Marcus Lemonis, the CNBC host of The Profit, the TV show, has bought Botrust Coffee. And Botrust Coffee was founded by Phil Tadros, claimed as a serial entrepreneur from himself. And he, there's just been a lot of activity because there's a lot of reputation around Phil, and there's a lot of, you know, different perspectives that come into the whole play of everything.
So, Amy, that might be the understatement of the century.
I was going to say, I think you're going to need to elaborate a little bit more. Because
he's been spending too much time with Dudley.
Yeah, right.
He's got that democratic approach.
So diplomatic about this. But there are characters involved in this play, for
yes.
Sure. And quite a bit has been said about them. I think Cranes wrote about this most recently. But tell us a little more, because this is a bit more of a contentious relationship, perhaps, than it might seem at first.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I should start off by saying that some of the original investors in Botrust are also original investors in Technori. So I've got sort of the behind the scenes and then the Cranes and sort of every sort of direction. I have no affiliation to Botrust or Phil. We're trying to get Phil on the phone here to talk to us about it. But the reality is, Cranes wrote, I think, what in journalism you call a takedown piece on Phil. He has been an entrepreneur in Chicago since really it sort of the tech boom sort of came here. And he started a coffee shop called Botrust. And it's been very popular, but there's been some very unhappy investors. And there was a lot of back and forth between these fellows. And ultimately, when Cranes wrote this piece, I mean, it was, I would say, viral in Chicago. It was everywhere. There was thousands of messages. And, you know, Phil tried to defend himself and did the best that he could. And he was on the media circuit. But literally, defamation lawsuits have come out of this. And the major piece here is that Marcus Lemonis is a well-known Chicago, I don't know if he's Chicago, he's not Chicago born, Florida born, but Chicago, lives in Lake Forest, is the founder and CEO of Camping World, and he has a show on CNBC called The Profit. And what's interesting about The Profit is ultimately they go and fix companies. There's been a bunch of them here in Chicago that they've gone to fix. And the major piece here is that he always says, I only invest in people first. Marcus Lemonis is known for saying, I invest in people first. And when all of the storm came around Phil Tadros, it was all character hits. And I'm not the judge or jury. I have no idea. I don't know Phil personally, so I don't know, you know, what kind of person he is exactly. But I do know that for Marcus Lemonis to come out and call it noise is, you know, is a big deal. He called it noise. And so now that we have Phil on the phone, you know, hopefully he can talk to us.
Yeah. Wow. Lots going on here. Hi, Phil Tadros is joining us now by phone. Talk to us, Phil. There's
hey.
So much going on.
Hello.
We've set up, we've been talking about this story just a little bit. The founder of Botrust is, and things have shifted for you. But as we are talking about this, there's a lot of nuance swirling around all that you're working on right now. So talk to us about that, if you would.
I don't know where to start, but it's been a pretty wild 6 months. We're excited. We have a great partner and team. And we want to continue doing what we do, and definitely, you know, we don't mind attention with, hey, here's a new location, a news article, an eater, but we were definitely, you know, attacked, I believe, big time. And I don't think any small business that's, you know, trying to do what we're trying to do deserves that, considering we really don't know what we did wrong. So that was just an unbelievable experience for us. And I don't know, things are...
When you say attacked, are you talking specifically about the piece in Cranes?
Yeah, I mean, I've never dealt with anything like that in my life. You know, every time somebody wants to talk to me about what we're working on, we're always, you know, hams about it. And we're like, yeah, let's talk, sure, you know. and they wanted to do a profile piece on me, and I was like, cool. You know, we have a lot going on. There's a lot of action around new projects we're investing in and growing, and talent that we're trying to help and support grow. And I kind of felt blindsided, and it was very unusual.
Phil, this is Scott Catoon. I wanted to ask you, one of the main things that was interesting is the Marcus Simonis piece, the fact that he is is from Lake Forest and wants to do a lot of great things here. How did that relationship, you know, even come to develop? Was that something that was going on for a while, or is that something that you guys kind of just sort of came to you? And the main question.
Go ahead, sorry. No, it was very recent. It was just like not even a few months. One of our vendors, Lemonese, who has an amazing organic lemon water that we sell, Adam, he just did an email intro, and he said, I think you guys should connect. I think the Botrus brand would be great for Marcus. And we started emailing and talking and texting and going back and forth for a few months. And then just recently, you know, he kind of stepped it up and was more aggressive with like, do we have a deal or not? Let's figure this out. And I love their style. I love their team. My experience, I'm super excited about what's to come and what's happened for sure.
Well, I have to ask you, you know, I think anyone in the audience wants to know, I'm a huge Prophet fan. I watch the show all the time. Is this one of those things that will be on the Prophet, or is this one of those things that's totally separate?
I think it's totally separate. We talked about it, you know, a couple times, and I think it's separate. It was really, you know, based on an intro, and it's based on business, and I love his show, and I'd be honored, you know, to be on there. But at the time with so much going on in press or whatever, I'm hurt by Chicago and the press. So I'm kind of like, I don't feel like sticking my neck out there, you know?
Well, let's not say all press. That's me. That's my colleagues. That's lots of people.
I apologize. Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have been really good to us too.
So perhaps there's a specific point made in the piece that is not selling well, but I'm sure you will address that in time. So as a serial entrepreneur, what's next for you?
Well, we want to scale Botrus, and, you know, I have, you know, Dojo is our hub, our headquarters for everything that we do. And, you know, I'm just excited to learn from, you know, Marcus's team, and our team's excited to grow with them. And I think that's really, really the focus, right?
Sounds like a good plan. All right. Thanks so much, Phil Tadros, for being with us today. Best of luck in all that is ahead.
For sure. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks very much. Well, we have covered a lot of ground. I feel like we probably need another hour to dig into the nitty gritty of all this stuff, Scott. We have unearthed many things.
It's been fun. It's been interesting. And we certainly have run the gamut of Chicago tech today.
Yeah, for sure. Well, come back and visit some other time for sure. And we're going to head to break here in just a second. And then when we come back, we're going to turn things over to King John and get you to news and all that good stuff back in just a bit on 720 WGN.